say that one of the earliest ones was Sir James Jeans in his mathematical treatment of mathematical theory of electricity and magnetism. And then he revealed that even he had gotten the idea from Lord Kelvin, possibly 10 or 20 years earlier, back around 1900. Lord Kelvin had reached this conclusion, but guess what it was all based on? What kind of an error had been made for 750 years before Lord Kelvin?
What?
That the compass, the little, lowly, humble compass that we have been using since it was first invented in the 1100s, has been read backwards or upside down for that length of time, 7.5 centuries, before any scientist apparently discovered.
Is that the reason I don't do well on the golf course? Because I always take a compass with me on the golf course.
It might
be. To get out of the rough.
No kidding. It might be. It might also be why Columbus thought he was sailing to the East Indies and then ended up in the West Indies. You recall that little goodie?
I've often wondered about that, Larry.
Yeah, I imagine, quite a few people have. Well, so Exhibit A in our case here, that Western civilization's belief system is mostly upside down. Exhibit A is that the poles of the Earth in all four directions of our compass are backwards and upside down, and that means according to the two basic laws of magnetism. I won't go into those technicalities, but believe me, seven or eight scientists have testified to this in writing.
You know what I want to do?
Yeah.
You know, we've been treating this kind of lightly here with some levity as we came on here, because I wanted to get your attention, because you're a very serious man, Larry Bourne. And we're dealing with some very serious material.
You could say that.
although whenever I say to you that we think that the North Pole is it's really the South Pole and we've got it wrong, that really sounds kind of funny. But there are some ramifications about that that make a lot of sense and can change the course of a lot of things.
May I clarify that?
Certainly.
A lot of people say, oh, well, that's just semantics, because who cares what we call the upper pole of the North or South Pole. Wrong. Totally wrong. North pole of a magnetic circuit means a function that is entirely different than a South Pole function. And in terms of yin-yang philosophy, which is my basic philosophy, the North Pole is the emitting or masculine aspect of magnetism, and the South Pole is the feminine or receiving aspect of magnetism. So therefore, they are two entirely opposite. Now, it so happens they've discovered the upper pole of the Earth is the receiving pole. Therefore, mm-hmm. according to Faraday's second law of magnetism, it has to be called a South Pole to be consistent mm-hmm. with all other magnetic laws.
Well, does this explain the unusual surge of electrons moving out of the South Pole to the up and end of the atmosphere that our satellites discovered that shouldn't have been moving there?
It very well could. Now, I may not be familiar with that exact piece of evidence you're talking about. I thought you were going to say that there is this magnetic flow of energy from the lower pole, which is the emitting or north pole, up towards the south pole, and that's what causes the compass needle to point that way. It's because this magnetic energy is pushing it that way.
Well, no, I was talking about the satellites discovered this unusual flow of electron movement. Out of the South Pole.
Out of the South Pole more than the North Pole?
More than the North Pole.
Oh, my gosh, that's an extra piece of evidence I want to lay
out. And it absolutely should. There was no way to...
To account for it.
To account for it unless you all at once change the polarity of the poles.
Uh-huh.
Now, this is something that NASA has just been shoving to the side there.
Can you find me that piece of evidence somewhere before...
I'll try to find it. It's in my files there somewhere.
Beautiful, because it adds to our case very strongly. Okay.
All right, what I want to do with you, Larry, is because we're going to try to go over about 15 or 20 elements here tonight.
That's
about how the world is inside out, topsy-turvy, and backwards. And with a lot of scientific explanation for it, but I know that there were probably some people that want to talk to you about all of these things,
yeah.
And we don't want to leave our friends out.
No.
You know, we have a very astute group that listen to this program.
Right.
In fact, I really feel that... the Open Mind listeners are probably the most astute in the world.
They very
of any
well,
of any radio show, and it's simply because of the subject matter we go on, and they're interested in the same things that we are. Let me give you the numbers. If you want to talk to Dr. Boron tonight, the number in Los Angeles is 520. All of these numbers, by the way, end in talk, and I want you to remember that, TALK.
Uh-huh.
In Los Angeles, it's 520. In the San Fernando Valley, you're 990. In Burbank, Glendale, and Pasadena, it's 244. San Gabriel Valley, 448 South Bay, that's El Segundo, Gardena, Hawthorne, Inglewood, Rolling Hills, Torrance, our good friends in Rolling Hills, got a bunch of them there. Compton, Lakewood, Downey, San Pedro, you're 639. And if you're in Orange County, you're in the 714 area code or the 619 area code, either one, you're at 750. And if you're in the 213 area code, you're at 448. So I want you to call in and talk to Larry, because we're going to go through a lot of things tonight that had... It's going to give you reason to think, because a lot of the things that you're holding on to as a part of the reality just very well may be backwards.
Yes, I think it's going to blow their minds. I think it's going to send some shockwaves around the world.
Well, let's try some shockwaves, because we need to be shocked a little bit.
I think we do.
What we're doing is not right. You know, this is
something
one of the things
is wrong
that
somewhere.
One of the things we're talking about, it, whether it's in our social sciences, whether it's in our political sciences, whether it's in our system of giving goods and services, our religions, nothing seems to be working.
The financial system, the judicial system, they're all...
Name it all. The way we educate our children, the way we live our lives, the way we go into marriage.
Right,
it's
right.
It's not working as well, and could be, that we have got the cart before the horse, the dog is wagging the tail.
Could be.
And you have some things for us to chew on tonight.
I certainly do.
We're not gonna, we may be treating this with a little bit of levity, Larry,
it's
but
right,
it's very serious, or you wouldn't be on this show.
I know.
You know, I have gone over this with you and decided to put you here, and I think it's well worth it the folks give a chance to listen to. So, let's start once with this topsy-turvy world. You've told us the North Pole is really the South Pole.
And all four directions are backwards and upside down, and maybe that's possibly one reason we have subconsciously lost our sense of direction.
Well, now, Joe has an idea here for you. Joe, you with us?
I had a question.
Okay, Joe.
And it's about the north and the south and east and the west being backwards. And I wondered if it was always like that. And if it wasn't, did it have any effect on the earth when it changed?
Are you talking about a pole shift, perhaps,
yeah.
Joe?
Yeah.
Well, they claim that the last pole shift was at least 12,000 years ago. I've read that. I believe that was the figure. So we're not talking about that. We're talking about the invention of the Western Compass in the 1100s. They can't place it exactly, possibly around 1150, by the Norsemen, and the Scandinavians seem to be the ones that possibly invented the Western Compass. Now, they already had had the Chinese compass, mind you, in the Eastern world or the Orient. And believe it or not, they found later, it has been determined and found that for hundreds, if not thousands of years, the Chinese were using an opposite compass, believe it or not, with its needle pointing to the lower pole of the earth. And this was brought out in a book on magnetism that I found in my research. But it's only known to a few Western minds, and of course a lot of Chinese minds know about it. Now, that's part of the answer. So what I'm saying is that they, from the time they first, if you want to know what the basic mistake was, they can say, well, it was kind of an excusable mistake that they said, okay, let's define the compass needle that points to the upper direction of the earth, which has been called north for hundreds or if not thousands of years. Let's call it the north end of the compass needle because it's pointing to that north, so-called north direction or north pole. But actually, that violates the first law of magnetism that any schoolboy of 12 or 14 should know. And it's a miracle that no great scientist has caught this in over 700 years, that a north pole cannot be attracted to another north pole, only to a south pole, and vice versa.
Are you talking with the compass in the magnetic north?
Yes. We're talking about the magnetic north pole, or the magnetic pole of the upper region of the earth, and how it attracts a compass.
And one more question.
Yeah.
I don't remember where I heard this, and it was only said once, and I've never heard anything else about it. And it was about our galaxy expanding at a tremendous rate, and they didn't know what effect it was going to have.
We're going to get into that in a little bit, by the way, about how that's wrong.
Yeah, that's right. We are. So maybe if you'll stand by for 10 or 15 minutes, we'll reach that particular point.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Okay, bye. Thank you for calling.
All right, Joe, thank you very much for your questions. You're spending a Saturday night with Bill Jenkins and Dr. Lawrence Boren on the Open Mind program. And what we want to give you some food to think about is that a lot of the things that you think are real, that is a part of our reality, just very well may be backwards, inside out, upside down, topsy-turvy, however you want to go to it. And it's some very serious stuff we have for you to think about tonight, so you stay with us. I'm Bill Jenkins, it's KABC, and it's 21 minutes past 10. I'm KABC, and we are talking about the fact that most Well, a lot of the things, not most everything, but a lot of the things that you hold near and dear in your mind in terms of physics and the way the universe works and perhaps the society works is on target. This may be backwards, is what we're about. Now, Joe alluded to the Big Bang Theory a minute ago. I know this is probably a little bit out of your schedule there, but you want to get down to that and show that why the Big Bang Theory is a bust?
Yes, Bill, we could get to that. That was point E on my outline. So we'll jump to point E. Okay. Our main astronomical model, which is the genesis of a universe that is highly organized, but unplanned and uncreated, mind you, forever running down, yet forever expanding at the same time, with no advanced cosmic intelligence behind it to create and control it. Such a model, the universe is now also beginning to fall apart. Because, why? Because it's inside out and upside down according to the latest evidence and findings. Point one, recent discovery of a small neutrino mass leads, finally, say experts, to an expanding and contracting, or cyclic, well-ordered and totally symmetrical universe. This is also well supported by Einstein's equations for a cyclic universe. Point two, recent discovery that the entire universe is rotating fits not at all into the present Big Bang explosion theory, unless radically altered to include what we will hereby call a divine fiat, commanding the universe to rotate as it expands outward. Without that divine fiat, there is no way of explaining why it chose to rotate. Okay, point three. This divine fiat could only come from that part of the universe which is not rotating, namely that mysterious central something which is motionless and at absolute rest, and around which everything else is rotating. Ancient mystics called this central something the great central source. This, by the way, is probably the strongest evidence yet that science and religion are, perhaps, about to unite. Now, there is one further point. I'll make it. Fourth is the amazing evidence shown in one magazine called the Sciences Journal. And I quote, "For some mysterious reason, the vigor of the Big Bang explosion was matched so delicately to the gravitating power of the universe that the galaxies had just enough speed to escape each other's gravity, yet not so much as to too rapidly disperse. This matching of explosive vigor to gravitating power is accurate to no less than 1 part in 10 to the 60th power.
1 to the 60th power?
10 to the 60th power.
10 to the... Well, that's
1 with 60 zeros after it.
That doesn't give too much room for error, does it?
Doesn't really, no. And this astonishing fidelity has puzzled cosmologists for a long, long time. Why should the universe be arranged to such a phenomenal accuracy, says the author in this magazine, The Sciences. And that was in third and fourth a month in this year. This was just, I think, mm-hmm. the last issue, page 35. The answer is, it shouldn't be arranged to such phenomenal accuracy unless something like a guiding cosmic intelligence is in control. I mean, that's the only way. If anyone can think of another reason why it should, please, let's hear from you. We'd like to know if there's any way that all of this could be true without some kind of a supervising and guiding intelligence from the very start of the universe right up to this very moment.
Well, now, Larry, you're doing some things here to the scientific community which they don't appreciate. It seems to me, for the most part, they like to believe that for some reason all of this energy came together, created matter, did all of the things, because matter is just a lower form of energy, moving at a lower vibration, in a way. And it just one day, all by itself, for no reason or another, exploded.
Yeah.
And it created a big bang thing, mm-hmm. and it did enormously precise maneuvers.
Exactly.
And created galaxies, and within the galaxies were billions and billions and billions of stars, and around the stars were billions and billions of planets. Right. And all this happened just by some sort of quirk of fate or
accident or a random choice.
And what they're saying to us now is that this explosion happened, this Big Bang, billions of years ago.
15 billion.
And within a period of time, we're all going to be flung out into infinity. You know, like right now we can see the stars.
Yes.
But we're going to be flung so far that one day we're just going to be alone out here so far away you can't even see the stars.
Right, because they believe it's all expanding infinitely.
All expanding infinitely.
Without ever coming back towards...
And that there is no rhythm or rhyme or consciousness or
plan.
Some sort of plan about that.
Or purpose.
Because for some reason or other, it is very difficult for our great great minds of our time to accept the fact that there is a mind greater than their own.
Exactly, that's the rhythm.
And that there is, you know, the religionists may want to call it God. It doesn't make any difference what you want to call it, but there is,
we say,
here on the Open Mind Show, a infinite intelligence greater than ours.
Can't be
and we're not trying to be metaphysical, and we're trying to be spiritual. It may be another human being that has got great powers that we don't have yet. We haven't reached them. Whatever it is. But you're saying the Big Bang Theory is a bust.
Yeah, that it's only part of the picture, in other words. They just haven't filled in all these latest details that have been discovered.
That indeed there is an expansion of all of the celestial beings going on, but there also is a very cyclic contraction of them.
Return to the source.
And everything is moving in order, and order doesn't come without some sort of intelligence to direct that order.
Exactly.
It doesn't happen by itself.
Right.
All by yourself.
And it's all symmetrical and all in perfect balance. But if they leave out the contracting half of the cycle of the universe returning to its central source, naturally they have an unbalanced, unsymmetrical picture where it's all running down. They call that the second law of thermodynamics, which they say is perhaps the most fundamental law in physics. Well, that's, in my book, nonsense, because that's only taking in half of the reality. It's the other half of the cycle, the other oscillation, is where all that energy that's been moving out and expanding outwards will be drawn back, you know, towards the source again. Therefore, you can't say that we're living just in a universe where everything runs.
But there's a cycle to it.
There's a
rhyme or reason to it.
Right.
Exactly. And you do not buy the fact that that just is a natural happenstance, but there is absolutely something dictating that order.
And I'm saying that I'm finding more and more scientists, that is, advanced scientists, a few of them are beginning to favor this point of view. Yeah.
Well, you know, I deal with a lot of scientists on the show.
And they have the evidence.
And more I hear them talking about the great consciousness. But they have a lot of, you know, somehow or another, they really skirt around the word God,
mm-hmm.
which is all right with me, if you want to skirt around that.
That's right.
But the inference is still there that there is something of enormous intelligence
right.
that is running and operating, or at least setting down the ground rules on how things are going to work.
Controlling the overall patterns.
All right, let's go to another caller. You've given us two good ones here tonight. Let's see what Wayne has on his mind. I believe it is Wayne. Are you with us?
Yeah.
Okay.
I just got through reading the article that Mr. Boron put in the Science Digest.
Mm-hmm.
And the questions that I have basically are concerning the magnetic physics, you know, magnetic physics.
That's all right. You can go back to that because we've already started on that.
All right. Sure.
And, okay, in research that I've done, because I'm right now taking classes in metaphysical physics.
I think you'll enjoy the show tonight.
And Lord, I can't remember what his name is, but he went to the North Pole, the English explorer anyway. When he reached the North Pole, his compass...
Is that Perry or Cook or... I don't know.
Cook, I believe, yeah.
It might have been Cook.
Lord Cook.
Go ahead.
Okay, the compass directed to the opposite direction the second he stood at exactly the North Pole. And the same thing happened on all the expeditions that have gone to the South Pole. The compass has changed direction.
Yes, well, I think what you're alluding to there, when they get near the pole, either pole, the compass needle will suddenly, if they were standing right over it suddenly in the last few seconds, the compass needle would take a dive straight down the needle. In particular, at the North Pole, I think at the South Pole, it would be the needle, the arrow on the needle would be pointing straight up.
Are you talking about the magnetic pole now or the axis pole? Because there's a difference.
The magnetic pole, yeah.
Yeah, because the axis pole, your magnetic compass is going to read otherwise.
Right. So we're strictly on magnetic poles here. The unfortunate, we do not yet know why the axis of the Earth is 23, no, it's about 11 degrees off from the magnetic.
It changes almost from day to day.
Yeah, the magnetic axis seems to change from the geographic axis. And why that is, that's one of the remaining mysteries we have yet to solve. But they're quite close. I mean, they're within 1,000 miles or 800 miles or something like that at each pole.
Well, we see the northern magnetic pole just drifting across northern Canada willy-nilly. I can't see that we have developed a cycle for its movement. But it does move.
Yeah, let me mention this. Now, we're going to open up. We're going to blow up in a new ball game here for a second.
That's what we're all about. Go ahead and do it, Larry.
No, okay. I have with me, I just brought it along just in case we ever got to this point, but we're getting into it right now. Yes, the Earth is really hollow. Way out there, way inside, I should say.
I haven't bought that yet.
No, but let's consider a few things. The Russians in, well, this was based on one geophysicist from UCLA, at least, Professor William Jameson, who has written a book on that all planets are hollow inside, according to the requirements of their structure and so on. But anyway, we won't go into that particular point, the point I'm making at the moment.
I know Jules Verne thought he was. He wrote a good book about it.
Yeah, of course.
But Don Wilson wrote another book about it.
Right.
But I'm not sure that that has really, really supported a great deal of fact. You're going to give us
something to think about? Something a little bit related to it.
Okay.
The Russians found in 10, 20 years ago in study of surveying in the northern area, the northern region around the pole, that the migration of the pole, apparently, of the North Magnetic Pole, so-called, describes an actual circle. It is not just a meandering at willy-nilly, but it seemed to describe in their reports, they did a graph on it, and I saw the picture of the graph, and it actually describes almost a perfect circle in right around that North Pole, so to speak, with the magnetic pole at the center of it.
I mean, the movements of the...
The movement of the magnetic pole,
if you were to chart them, they would be sort of a circle.
Around the geographic North Pole, and forms a circle. And, of course, the author of this particular book I was reading felt that that was suggesting, you know, that this big opening that's been seen in the northern region of the Earth.
We have one satellite picture that certainly suggests that.
That certainly suggests that there's something like a huge opening. So the Russian point of view appears to be that the magnetic pole is traveling around that circular opening, and that the geographic pole may be at the center of that circle. But anyway, there's some tie in there that I'm suggesting may have validity. I'm not going to hold out for that strictly, but just throwing it in for consideration.
Well, Larry, I'm a very open-minded guy, and I talk to a lot of people.
Right.
And I got to tell you that just from my point of view yet, because I certainly am not a physicist or any of those things, I'm just a guy that gets into this a lot.
You do.
I can't say that I go with the open, with the hollow earth idea.
It's only worth looking into some of the evidence.
I've read the books, and I have talked to the guys who wrote the books.
Can we get through to this William Jameson?
I don't know about William Jameson. I'd like to have a copy of that article.
Yeah, former geology professor at UCLA who wrote a book called Hollow Worlds and claims he's got lots of evidence to support it.
Because there are stories that there are civilizations in the corner, and a lot of the flying saucer phenomena we have has to do with that society that lives down in there. I'm not ready for that one. You know, I'm ready for a lot of things. I'm not ready for that one yet.
But that doesn't mean anything.
Billy is not what you would call one of the smartest people in the world, me.
Well, you just want more evidence.
I just want more evidence on that particular thing.
We all do.
All right. And we'll get some more evidence from you, Larry. We have a lot of things to go over in the next year. We've only covered two. You have about 15 or 20 things you want to tell us.
That's correct.
All right. We have found out that the North Pole is the South Pole.
Magnetically, according to the laws of magnetism, right.
And so, therefore, everything is backwards.
Right. And
we have found out that the Big Bang Theory is a bust. It's really a fizzle.
It's inadequate.
But the universe, it may be expanding, but it also contracts also. There is a rhyme to reason for it, and you say that is
it's
because of...
It's a symmetrical universe, in other words, that it just doesn't keep running down as they keep emphasizing the second law of thermodynamics.
Which leads you to believe that there is a greater intelligence than just a bunch of electrons and neutrons going out there and doing their thing. I really like that idea, to think that our destiny is in the hands of more than just a few electrons and protons that are doing wild things.
Doing everything by random accident and that sort of thing. Okay, are you ready for the next
one? Well, we're going to go to the next one after we take a little break.
Uh-huh.
Dr. Lawrence Boron is with me. I am Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind, and it's a freewheeling open mind. I'll talk to you. Bob is on the line. Bob, welcome aboard.
Good evening. Dr. Boron?
Yes.
I'd like to hear your comments in regard to which way current flows out of a battery. Does the electrons come out of negative terminal, or does a positive charge come out of a positive end, or what's happening there?
Okay, I'm glad you brought that up. That happens to be point H on my list of of upside-down situations.
We had a very detailed list of how we were going to go through this, Bob, and we were already to H, and we hadn't got to A yet, so that, you know, it's an upside-down show tonight.
Yeah, that's all right. We can cover these in any sequence. Okay, I put it this way. The true cause and action of electrical force, or the law of electrical force, is taught backwards in all the textbooks by all the instructors. And we do have proof positive, yes. Especially in the case of man-made electricity. You know, I'm speaking mainly of electricity flowing through wires. To be exact, they teach it both the right way from minus to plus, and also they teach it the wrong way from plus to minus, which goes all the way back to Benjamin Franklin. And I raise this question, is that or is that not insanity to be teaching all students who want to understand electricity in these courses on electronics and electricity for electricians and so on, and one of the opening courses in physics, they teach it both ways, right and wrong. Just, and then they tell me the reason. This is the reason they give. Well, it seems that some of the early professors were still teaching the way they thought was right up until around 1900, and they found it just too difficult to change the textbooks all suddenly to the opposite way, and they figured, well, we'll just to continue teaching that way, we'll call it a different name. So guess what? They called it current. When electrical current goes this way to the left from plus to minus, and electron flow goes to the right from minus to plus. But
isn't that a bit confusing? I mean, what's the difference between the flow of electricity? What's electron flow and electrical current?
And then they end up
what's
saying,
the difference?
In order to justify it, too, I've had one professor say, well, it's really that we're saying that positive charges go to the left and minus charges go to the right. But the point is that positive charges do not travel in ordinary electrical circuits. Now, they will bring up this situation that is a very special one, the case of semiconductors, where they have, shall I say, created this myth, I will call it, but it appears to be something that could be described as flowing to the left. You see, they say...
Are you with us when we say flowing to the left, Bob?
Yeah, are you talking about holes?
Yes, I'm talking about holes, exactly.
Right.
I'm saying that as they trace what they... Now, remember, they haven't settled on what's really happening inside of wires when electricity flows. I've heard two or three or four or five different theories because they say we really don't know. Okay, you can say Heisenberg principle of uncertainty. They just can't tell what's really going on. But one theory is called the bucket brigade, where each electron passes a charge, its minus charge of electricity or electrical energy, to the electron next to it on the right, and then the next one passes it to the third one, and they keep receiving it from the one on the left and passing it to the one on the right. Then they say, now, if you'll notice in semiconductors, when that is happening, it freeze a hole each time. Or, wait a minute, now, I'm possibly getting that confused now. I should go into the second theory of electron flow, and that is that each electron actually does jump to playing musical chairs, as it were. You know what musical chairs are. So when one electron jumps to the next chair to the right, then the one on its left will jump to its chair to fill it in. Now, what they say is happening that is a series of vacancies are opening up that are moving to the left. And these vacancies or holes that are moving to the left while the electrons are jumping to the right is a flow of positive current. Now, that's pretty far-fetched in my
mind. Larry, we got musical chairs and a bucket brigade going here all at the same time.
The reason I raise the question is because I've heard that there is an electron flow and a conventional current flow in the other direction.
Yeah, well, what the devil do they mean by that? I mean,
we're talking about semantics here.
Yeah, see, it's all they're doing is creating confusion in the mind of any student who is trying to grasp and master what's really happening, and then they finally admit, well, we really don't know what's exactly happening, but we do believe, basically, that electron energy is flowing to the right from minus to plus. Now, they do believe that, and they will admit that Ben Franklin had it wrong about the electron flow, electron energy going from the... from the plus charge to the minus charge.
See, your question is very good, Bob. Actually,
perfect. Yeah.
It's extremely good because we want to clear up this little thing here right now, and that's what Larry's trying to do.
Well, I appreciate your time. Bill, I must say I missed your Sunday morning program.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, you go with us a long time, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Well, I miss it too, you know.
Okay, thank you.
I hope that helped out a little bit. It's still a confusing situation.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Bob. Appreciate that. And I appreciate your comment about the old wage report. But what is interesting to note, that there is a new science in electronics now. I don't know if I've had a chance to even brief you on this, Larry, where
maybe
scientists have learned how now to organize electrons through a conductor, much like we organize the movement of electrons with light, a laser light. And we, by being able to organize the electrons, move them through a conductor like that, we get rid of the musical chairs, and we get rid of the bucket brigade, as it were, and you're organizing the electrons of electricity through a conductor like a laser does light. And it moves with a highly efficient state, and you can increase the efficiency of electricity in this fashion now, which is now being employed by our government, thank you.
Amazing.
By about 80 to 90%.
Is this from Tom Bearden, by any chance?
Tom Bearden, Bill Tiller, and some of those people have developed that for the Pentagon, yes.
Oh, great. I'd like to see the latest research on that when you have a minute.
Well, it's the way we'll probably be doing things in the next 2 or 3 years. We'll organize electrons through a conductor, and you don't... homage almost disappears. We just won't have that anymore unless you just want that.
Which is going to disappear?
Homage. You know, the resistance in a wire.
Resistance. Homage, yeah, I see. Right.
Which reduces the need for the superconductor and all of those other things. That's...
In other words, they'll have superconductors at room
don't
temperature.
Don't need them anymore.
But at room temperature, the equivalent of...
Anything can be a superconductor if you're organizing the electrons. And we have found out... the scientific community here in the United States, has found out how to organize the movement of electrons through a conductor.
Amazing.
Which may be a little surprising to our friends at Caltech and TRW, but that's what's going on.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Okay. Do you want to go to another one of your things here?
Yeah, I'll go to what I put down as our second point originally, our main biological law. Okay? It's called Darwinian evolution. Right? But it's proving more and more to be upside down, backwards, and inside out. Now, it's been going for
a while. Wait a minute, you're talking about you and me whenever you talk about that.
Yes, and what scientists' opinion of you and me is, that is. Okay, number one evidence is from Edgar Mitchell, someone you are familiar with.
Oh, guest on this show many times.
Right, and his group called the Institute of Noetic Science, I believe.
One of the finest groups in the country.
Right, I've been reading some of their terrific material by Willis Harmon.
Ed will be on in the next couple of months, by the way.
Oh, excellent. Okay, now their theme, I remember reading this in a... A thing, by the way, Andreev Puharich interviewed Edgar Mitchell. And
we'll be on next month.
Bye. Oh, great. Well, we're touching all the main
guys.
We
try to get the biggies here.
We get the biggies here. Now, this is what their conclusion was after, roughly 10 years of study. Consciousness had to exist from the very start of the universe because it's, first of all, so different completely from matter, and secondly, it has power or control over matter, which they have demonstrated in experimental situations and studies many, many times. For it to evolve out of matter, according to Darwinian thinking, they say is totally absurd. Okay? That's point one. That's one group who is undermining Darwinian evolution theory. Okay? Point two, doing the same thing from a different point of view, is from Dr. Wickramasinghe of Wales. It sounds like a Hindu, but he's teaching at Wales. He's one of the leading mathematical physicists in the world. Along with Fred Hoyle, he's been working on some new ideas. Okay, and he makes the statement. It's also ridiculous to suppose that the information provided by one single primitive bacterium can be upgraded, finally, to produce a man and all other living things. Okay, that was his favorite statement. And here's the third piece of evidence to undermine Darwinian evolution from Drs. Epton and Lovelock of England. And this came out just a year or so ago. That a higher intelligence apparently prepared Earth's atmosphere for living things in two aspects. The control of the oxygen content, which is so vitally important to both animals and humans, and the control of the temperature range. Those two aspects have been controlled, they say, since the inception of the Earth practically. And there's no way that science can explain how those two things could be delicately controlled within 1% of variation, let's say, even though it's being bombarded constantly by outside forces from the galaxy and the solar and the sun and so on, and which, you know, it had to have, they're saying, a rheostat or a control system built into the Earth, supervised, mind you, they say, by some kind of an advanced intelligence. A higher intelligence had to be controlling that situation.
Well, let me add this to you. Now, we know... I mean, the data is There is no way you can deny the data that there have been a number of catastrophic changes in the Earth. Pole shifts, for instance. Mm-hmm. Great pole shifts. Now, if the world was not on the axis that it's on, at the proper relationship to the sun, tilting back and forth as it spins, giving us our climatic changes. If you were to take the pole and shift it 90 degrees in one direction,
mm-hmm.
this planet would not be conducive to life as we know it.
Right.
In fact, life would not exist. You would have a very hot North Pole and a very cold pole. Nothing would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot of evidence to suggest that some enormous changes happened on the planet. The pole was shifted in a certain way. Other changes were made to align it up just perfectly. Whereas before it wasn't perfectly aligned. It was just a celestial body sitting here spinning an Earth where life could not exist. Some changes were made to it to make it a pristine and ideal place
right.
for life to exist.
And
that happened before life existed.
Yes.
Now, are we to believe that that happened just because of the willy-nilly movement of electrons and protons and all of the other things that our great bushy-brained scientists like for us to believe?
Yeah, exactly. Well, their point of view is very far-fetched when you analyze it very carefully.
Theirs is more bizarre than ours by saying that there was an intelligence that came along and said that this is an ideal place for people to live because it was our life to exist. It's in the temperate zone of a planet. Let's make some changes so that it will work well for them. Give them seasons, give them things, all of the stuff that we now enjoy. It did not exist at one time on this planet. We know that for a fact.
Right. Okay. And something happened to make it exist.
Now, we're going to take a break here for just a second and go to our callers again and let them chew on these for just a second. I'm Bill. All of the things that you want to, which means you're going to have to come back because we're going to talk to Jim right now because Jim has a question about the Big Bang Theory. Jim?
Yeah.
You're talking to the guy that says the Big Bang Theory is all wrong.
We hope we're blowing your minds a little bit at least out there.
Good, Larry. Thanks very much. I had a question about several years ago, maybe 10 years ago, when I was in high school, I went to a seminar at Caltech.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a budding scientist at that time, trying to decide what I wanted to do. And they sat us down and took us through an entire day full of science and filled our minds with ideas. One of the things that I remember is they described three separate occurrences or separate theories on the beginnings of the universe.
Yep.
Two of which I wanted to describe right now. One is point that starts out with a whole bunch of mass and energy, and it explodes, and everything flies into the universe at a certain rate, and it's expanding, and which is what you just described. The other one is the fluctuating theory, where not only does it expand, but it slows down to the point that now it begins to fall back on top of itself, and this is a cyclical motion.
Cyclical, right.
Cyclical, exactly.
Which we also described, yes.
Right. But the thing that they brought up, or the thing that they said will prove one way or the other, is the people that go around and look for mass in the universe.
Look for mass?
Mass.
Okay.
In other words, there's a formula that's something about force equals a constant times the mass of the second object over the distance squared, right?
Okay.
Okay, and so therefore, if we can determine that there is enough mass to, in a sense, pull itself back together again, then we can say, okay, there is therefore the possibility that everything's going to fall back together again, and as it collapses on itself, in a sense, then it will come back together in this big ball of mass and explode again.
Right.
And I wondered if any of your research had determined whether this question of how much mass, you mentioned 10 to the 60th.
Oh, yeah.
And it seems like we're right on the border if that is the error discrepancy between yes, we have enough, or no, we don't.
Okay, let me answer your question real quickly here. I quoted, when I went into the main astronomical model of the Big Bang Theory, point one was the recent evidence of a small neutrino mass.
Right.
I'm sure you've heard of this.
Right.
The Russians seem to have found this somewhere between 16 and 40 or 42 volts, electron volts, they have now assigned to the mass of the neutrino. And the conclusion of this particular article, which I'll quote to you, is from the Sciences Journal, 381, that's January, March 81, page 10. Okay, their final conclusion was that this one discovery of the fact that the neutrino has a small mass has supplied mathematicians with enough mass to totally overcome the Big Bang explosion and make the universe finally recede back upon itself.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this was the conclusive evidence that you're talking about, that you're looking, that they've been waiting for and hoping to find, or at least some of them have. It has been found approximately, well, say 2 or 3 years ago.
Hmm. Very interesting, especially because they were looking for it back, maybe, I heard this lecture in 73.
Right.
So they were all ears waiting for this discovery.
Okay, so this definitely then, according to your own statement, verifies the choice of the cyclic or contracting and expanding and contracting universe over one that's just simply expanding forever.
Right. That is exactly correct. Yeah, I think it's kind of interesting that these men, you know, many years ago, and of course it wasn't even new then, you know, we're actively in process trying to find this extra mass that they... Because they said this is the most likely possibility of the three.
Yeah, it's very interesting that they were aware that this is the missing link that they had to find. And then actually a group of them, apparently Russian scientists, actually went out there and found it. Maybe they weren't even looking for it.
Yeah. But one last real brief point. Never mind. I know you got to go.
You got to be brief here because we've got just a few seconds.
Comment on how you determine a universe rotates. In other words, with what point do you take reference?
Okay.
I tell you what we'll do, Larry.
Yeah. We'll hold that for a second.
You want to hang on, Jim, or
you
just listen? We'll answer that when we get right back.
Okay.
We've just run out of time here. We're going to pause for news. Our hour is done, but we have another hour to go tonight with Dr. Lawrence Boren on Open Mind. I'm Bill Jenkins. Stay with. Backwards world that all of us live in. We have found out that the North Pole is the South Pole. We have found out that the Big Bang Theory is a... wrong.
Backwards.
That it isn't the Big Bang Theory.
Well, it's only half true anyway.
Well, that's just half of it. But that there is some guiding force behind all of that. And I'm glad to see that you're talking about those sort of things. We have found out that electrons don't really move the way that science likes to say they are.
Half
you know?
The time, right.
That it really isn't the Bucket Brigade and the musical chairs parade that's going on. That whenever they knew something was wrong, they just wanted to forget it and say, well, we'll give it a different name. We'll call it flow, and we'll electron flow on one hand and current on the other.
Right.
And hope that nobody asks any questions because we don't have the answers. But, of course, Larry Boren asks the questions and comes up with a reason to find that... we just can't get by with that. Are you ready to take another caller here before we go further?
Well, now, should we do that answer that the gentleman called in on?
Yes, right.
On the rotating universe.
Right.
Okay.
Is Jim still with us?
Is Jim still out there?
On 9? All right, Jim, you still there?
Yep.
Okay,
could you repeat your question real quick?
Sure. When you were describing earlier your point about the rotating universe, in terms of the Big Bang, you mentioned about this... central mass in the universe, and you also stated that the universe was in fact rotating. Correct?
Right.
And I just wondered what your point of reference or what whoever described the rotation's point of reference was.
Well, first of all, I'll tell you what my interpretation would be to that.
Okay.
And then I'll give a quote from the article itself I have right in front of me. Okay, my interpretation is this. If you can assign a point of rest to the center of anything and then say that something is rotating around it, that's all you need to arrive at that conclusion. In other words, you have to have a point at rest somewhere, and if it happens to be in the center, then you can say, if that is at rest, then we can measure the rotation around it relative to that center of rest. Now, you want to respond to that, first of all.
Well, I guess philosophically, are you certain that it's at rest, or are you certain, or could it be that we're at rest
or
it's rotating?
Wait a minute. Let me clarify this.
Okay.
Anytime, anything moves in a circle and rotates one thing around another, like an electron around a proton, the universe around this mysterious center, anything, you know, let's say the periphery of a wheel rotating around the hub, there is at the center, there has to be a point that is at total absolute rest. This is scientifically and mathematically a fact.
Well, let me interject some things to answer my mind, which is not, you know, evidently on the same level of yours and Jim's.
Go ahead.
We talk about the solar system here. All of our planets are revolving around our sun.
Yes.
Now, and although we know the sun is moving too because it's involved in a larger movement, but for point of reference, is the sun at rest then in what you're talking about, the center of the sun?
There would be, yes, according to my, let's say, my understanding of mathematics as well as magnetics and so on, there has to be a point of perfect, infinite, absolute rest at the center of any body that's rotating.
Okay, now we're, of course, we know we're rotating around the sun. Let's say that there is a point then at the sun that's at rest.
Yes.
Now, we know that the sun is a part of the Milky Way galaxy.
Right.
We also know that the Milky Way galaxy rotates about once every 25,634 years, I believe it is, something like that.
35 years.
Give me a few years there.
Now,
there is a hub to the Milky Way galaxy.
Exactly.
And we are just now discovering the center of our galaxy. It's a very dense area of stars and some very, very strange X-ray emissions and neutron emissions and everything else comes out of that area. It's an enormous, it's an area of incredible energy.
Exactly. They call it, this, they're suspecting it's either a quasar source or a black hole source, they call it in their terminology.
But we realize that the Milky Way galaxy now is just but one of a large number of galaxies.
Millions.
We're talking
billions.
About billions.
Galaxies.
But the Milky Way galaxy seems to be involved in a little cluster of galaxies. A little, listen to me.
Yeah, listen to you. It's called a metagalaxy.
That are also moving in some sort of a movement within still a greater movement.
Right.
And we don't know how far these great movements of galaxies are moving.
True.
And we've just now lost my ability to comprehend all of this space and everything.
Right.
But I just wanted to kind of bring that
all right,
out.
Let me carry on
the issue here
from that one point then, Bill. Okay, at the moment, at the latest thinking of astronomers, they've only gotten up to the level of metagalaxies. Now, I'll familiarize you with this fact. They've gone from the level of galaxies that are rotating around in a metagalaxy, and then they do agree there has to be a group or an enormous group, maybe a million or billion or trillion, metagalaxies, mind you, rotating also around something. Now,
I have to bring that up because I haven't got beyond the San Diego freeway yet.
Oh, you rascal. Now, the point is this, Phil, that they haven't gone any center of rest in the universe, which has been brought out in this article from Science News, Volume 122, page 84, August 7th, 1982. You want me to read just one clarification further?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The astronomer in question, his name is Dr. P. Birch. They just give his first initial. The Manchester University of Manchester's Nuffield Radio Astronomy Laboratory at Jodrell Bank, England. A very prestigious place with one of the biggest radio telescopes. He found that the difference is generally negative for sources lying in one half of the sky and generally positive for sources in the other half of the sky. That is to say, to go from the elongation axis to the magnetic field direction involves a right-handed rotation in one half of the sky and a left-handed rotation in in the other half.
But don't we see that in the Earth? Like whirlpools move in one direction here in the northern hemisphere
yes.
and another direction in the
Absolutely.
Southern hemisphere.
Absolutely. It's a somewhat similar idea. Now, he says the line of division runs along the meridians defined by right ascension 9 hours and 15 minutes and 21 hours and 15 minutes. Normally, one would expect a random distribution. Here's the key point. But Birch's statistical analysis yields a probability of only 0.25% that the non-randomness arises by chance. Now, can you follow that one, figure that one out? He's saying that if it was... All right, he's saying that it's 0.25% that it could be a random distribution, and that 99.75% that it is not a random distribution, but that it is definitely an indication of a rotational effect. Now, I will finish this one statement. To test this, Birch studied a sample of very bright radio sources in which the magnetic field direction can be determined by other means. He finds that the same asymmetry, and he finds the same asymmetry, meaning the, what would you call that, it goes left one way and right the other way, and so concludes that the effect has something to do with the universe itself, the entire universe. Okay, he has two plausible causes for such a non-random distribution of magnetic orientations. One is an overall universal magnetic field throughout the universe that is lining up the radio sources that he's been measuring, or, as he prefers to believe or seems to feel the evidence confirms to a greater degree, it is a rotation of the universe as a whole, with the radio sources lining up with the vorticity generated by the rotation. Now, if you're good in physics and astronomy, you will understand what he's saying. That there's an axis to the whole universe, and he's measuring things that are moving in the axis left one on one half of the axis and to the right on the other half of the axis.
Well, isn't it true, Larry, that in all of the things that we have been able to really see, starting with the subatomic particles and going on up to the universe, that the order of one thing is mirrored in the next order, is mirrored in the next order, is mirrored in the next order, on up and down the line?
this is an ancient, even metaphysical teaching, believe it or not, from ancient philosophers, that as above, so below. As below, so above. But our modern scientists don't buy that idea.
Well, you know, they have to kind of jump on board. Jim, does that help you?
Yeah, and in fact, I was just going to bring that point out, that why would it exist in any different, in a gross macro scale, rather
exactly.
than at a very...
Like we had a single-minded exactly. architect, didn't we?
Yeah, it
yeah.
sure does.
And the design that he came up with was absolutely the very best.
And even if, you know, back to point five earlier, even if he chooses to use something like a Darwinian, in other words, just because you go to Detroit and figure out how the mechanisms for the assembly line work doesn't necessarily negate the architect that designed it.
Yeah, right.
And with regard to your point about bacteria,
the assembly line was fine. How we use the assembly line sometimes gets screwed up. But...
Sure, sure.
Exactly right.
No, I think that's an excellent argument, and you did a beautiful job in presenting. It makes all the sense in the world to me.
Well, we appreciate that response and your evaluation very much. I hope we can shake up some of the scientists out there a little bit.
Okay.
Well, it's the nature of science.
Appreciate your question.
Thank you.
It was a very,
much.
Very good question, and thank you for hanging on there during the news break.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Bill.
All right. Let's go to Barry. He has a question about, he wants to analyze your theory just a little bit. Barry, what's on your mind?
Hi, Bill. Hi, Dr.
Can you speak
Boren.
Up a little? Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you hear me okay?
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. I want to first say that you're not going to get through tonight. It's going to take about four or five more shows, I'm sure.
You may be correct on that. That's the plan.
I want to help slow you down. I want to take you back to one.
Okay. That's all right.
You started out talking about the poles being backwards.
What I call the great polar mix-up.
Right. I'd like to know... first of all, you said that we're mixed up because we got a tie-in with the solar system and the rest of the universe.
That was my original thesis in which I constructed this diagram. I call it the new magnetic electric model of the solar atom in my paper of 1964. But the other scientists had come up with the same conclusion from a different standpoint. I wonder if I made that clear or not. They arrived at. But what you're saying is, based on what I had... propounded in this original thesis, that because the sun is a magnet, a gigantic magnet, putting out a powerful magnetic field, which they didn't even know about in 1964. They only found this roughly in 76 or 77. And this magnetic field, they are now concluding, rides with the solar wind, and the solar wind nourishes, so to speak, or feeds into each magnetosphere of every planet that that has a magnetosphere, of which there's at least four or five that they know of. I contend that they'll find every single one has to some slight degree. And what it's doing then is feeding magnetic energy in from the north pole, basically, of the sun into the south pole, it obviously has to be, of each of the planets, which has to be, therefore, with its south pole up in comparison with the north pole of the sun being up. Now, go ahead. I'll let you continue from that point.
Okay. I'm wondering, then, are you suggesting that the sun changes its polarity also? Because there's some actual evidence that the Earth does it pretty regularly, and as recent as maybe 10,000 years ago. And I don't mean that the magnetic poles are wandering around.
No,
I mean where they are.
It's called a flip flop.
Yeah, a total flip flop. Now, if your theory is true, then the sun must be doing that also.
Well, we've had some axis flip flops, you know, on this planet.
I know that, and why would we have those flip flops if the sun didn't? Or do you think it does?
Well, all right, let's say this is still a moot question as to whether the sun's magnetic field flip-flops or not. Now, according to the recent thinking and the research on the solar wind and so on in the last 20 years, they have come to the conclusion that the sun's magnetic poles reverse themselves every 22 years. That is what one of their experts was telling me a few months ago. And then when I discussed it with my Caltech friend, John Campbell, he said he couldn't buy that idea because... They were trying to say that let's go back to Maxwell's equation. If the sun keeps rotating as it does in one direction, that's its electrical field motion, right?
Yeah.
Now,
Maxwell is missing two or three parts of his equation, by the way, so be careful with Maxwell.
I know, and I'm coming to that maybe a little later. Okay, now, if the sun doesn't reverse its electrical field, how can it reverse its magnetic field, according to Maxwell's theory of the relationship between the two? You see, one is always supposed to be at right angles to the other.
Yes.
And you can't reverse the magnetic field of the sun without reversing the electrical field of the sun. Yet they're, you know, bold enough to suggest that kind of a crazy situation is happening. And Professor Camel couldn't buy it, and I personally can't see how they can justify it either. Now,
there are about 26 different elements of electronic theory or electromagnetic theory that are having to be totally and radically changed at the present time. And we're talking about changes that are being instituted by Dr. Bill Tiller, by Tom Bearden, and some of the others, which really let Maxwell get by with it because he didn't understand these subtle changes that have to be made. Subtle. They're just absolutely the adverse of what we're dealing with here all the time.
Yeah, I
just thought I'd throw that in.
Before. Okay, thank you for throwing it in. Go ahead, my friend, if you have another point there.
I have only one last comment. Do you know of Edgar Rice Burroughs?
Yes.
He did Tarzan.
The author?
We all know of him.
Okay, he had Tarzan at the Earth's core, you know, so
yes.
It really must be hollow.
Well, you know, if...
Now, Barry, you're putting us on.
Okay, thanks for the super show. And look, I know you're not going to get all the way through, so be sure and put him back on, Bill.
Well, you know I'm going to have to, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, sure.
I want you to know the last time that he and John Campbell were on in December, the mail that we got on that particular appearance where we were talking about the positron was magnetic and not electromagnetic.
Yeah.
We
magnetic
got into some
electric,
other
to be exact.
Well, and that has been supported by some very, very, Tony Sarantinis and some of the others, Bill Tiller, Tom Bearden, they also support you in all of these sort of things. Literally changing some of the weapon systems we have in this country, by the way.
Mm. Okay.
So you know I got to bring him back, don't you?
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
All right. You see, you got a lot of fans out there, Larry. Let's go to see what Doug's on his mind. Doug?
Hello. How you doing, Bill?
All right.
Hi, Dr. Warren.
We have lost the show, Doug. We wanted to get through 26 elements.
Listen,
so don't
I'll tell you something.
It.
You guys are frying the lines tonight. What I want to know is where you're going for coffee afterwards. Because I have some things to talk to you guys about. Listen, you know, my background is in the esoteric and initiatic philosophies, the ancient mysteries, and so on. But
beautiful.
A lot of people are not aware that area is a synthesis of science, art, philosophy, and religion.
It's amazing how science is beginning to polarize toward that.
It is.
And those are the masters, and they didn't all come from the East, by the way.
That's right.
Some of them came from the West, and a lot of them were our Indian friends here in the United States.
Amen to that.
We're great physicists beyond the scope of what our modern-day physicists understand.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that a lot of what they came to know was by a type of direct or intuitive perception.
True.
All it was.
As well as whatever other methods were available. But, you know, there were the sayings such as, you cannot pluck the tiniest petal of a flower without the troubling of a distant star.
Beautiful.
And actually pointing to the implicit truth of the oneness of the universe.
Interconnectedness of all things.
Absolutely, absolutely.
They all came from the same source, didn't
they? Exactly.
Yes. And there's an etheric web that holds them all together by specific energy lines of force to the great central source.
That's right.
I'll throw that.
That's right. Now, I'll tell you this. I wasn't going to mention this, but I have had what people have called out-of-body experiences.
Oh, you? Everybody but Bill has had an out-of-body experience.
Right.
Well, can you teach me on how to do that, Doug?
It can be done.
And
it can be taught.
No.
It can be taught. But anyhow, the point was that a couple times when it happened to me, I began to accelerate, reaching unbelievable philosophies, actually transcending this dimension, going into other dimensions.
I've heard this time and time again.
Yeah, and what happens is as you start passing suns and stars and galaxies, you start vibrating and traveling at the rate of light, and pretty soon everything becomes that etheric web that Larry just described.
Yes.
Time
and
distance
have
broken down.
Right, exactly. I've seen it. But anyhow, the point that I wanted to mention was some of the ancient mystics had mentioned in several places that black holes, they were aware of black holes, that they did exist. But they were also aware of what Larry's bringing out, that there's this other side to everything, and that there must be a white hole.
Exactly.
That
absolutely
breathes in the essence of energy and matter before there can be the black hole that collapses it.
Right. And that was even brought out by the same physicist from England who brought out the black hole theory.
Sure. And the point I think that's really important is before anything can evolve, something must involve. And in really simplistic terms, you can prove it to a scientist by telling him if he wants to drink the glass of water, you have to first fill it with water. You know, and at the same time, it's the same with the universe. Before anything can evolve, it has to have had something poured into it.
Exactly.
Even going back to the Big Bang. Now, before that super atom could expand or explode and evolve into what is going on today.
Yes.
Something had to involve or pour itself into that state or condition,
exactly.
And they never addressed that.
They never addressed that. I agree with you 100%. May I just present my own thesis on it?
Certainly.
Okay, I have studied Blavatsky and many of the others.
Sure.
And one quote from her book, The Isis Unveiled,
right.
addresses what she calls the Great Central Sun
right.
concept, which, by the way, was echoed by Pythagoras in the terms he called the Great Central Fire.
Sure.
Okay, now, this apparently represents, even to, represented to the mystics of ancient times, their understanding that there was this great central source at the center of the universe. Now, there was a philosopher in the Middle Ages, a Kabbalist named Luria, by the way, who tied this in beautifully, by the way, with the God of the Infiniverse, if you can follow me here.
Mm-hmm.
This theory then, or we'll call it hypothesis, starts this way, that in the beginning, there was only the Infiniverse.
Right.
Then out of the Infiniverse, the God of the Infiniverse, the infinite God of the Infiniverse, decided to make a creation, and in so doing, knew that he had to consolidate and concentrate a certain portion of his infinite energies and substance into a central mass or a central source.
Right.
Which, by imploding those energies and concentrating them to a tremendous degree, gave it, put them under pressure, finally, then, to expand outwards, so to speak. In other words, it would be saying that this is the way, conceivably, that the universe originally started, and that once that process was started, it would be, under his supervision, a self-perpetuating cyclic mechanism, so to speak.
Exactly.
Which continually expands until it reaches the, what Blavatsky called the ring pass knot, and that means that the universe has a maximum boundary line, spherical boundary, beyond which is the Infiniverse. Okay,
right.
So the universe is a child of the Infiniverse.
Absolutely.
Filled with the same divine energies, only in a more concentrated form, shall we say, in its cosmic egg nucleus at the beginning of the explosion. And then that amount of energy expands outwards to a certain point and then contracts backwards, inwards, and creates this oscillating cycle. I just thought I'd throw that in.
Exactly.
You two together?
Exactly.
All right, well, let me...
Bill, I can't even disagree with him on anything.
Let me do something. You know, we talk about how all things are mirrored. One order is mirrored and another order is mirrored in another order.
Sure.
Right.
And you guys are talking about universes.
And the infinite.
And you're talking about a cosmic source that had to bring this into being.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly.
All right, now let me get you back down into a microcosm, if I can, to
okay.
the world that we live in.
Oh,
right.
Well, why not?
And refer you to a marvelous conversation we had with Dr. Edgar Mitchell, with whom I have enormous respect for.
Yes.
I'm just awed by a man that walked on the moon.
Yeah.
Many times.
I guess we also...
And he's been a guest on this show a couple of times.
Sure.
And he's the head of a thing called the Institute of Noetic Sciences, which you mentioned here tonight. And they have, you know, proof positive now that the human thought is in the virtual state. It's a thing. It exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it absolutely creates energy that affects your environment, which makes you a very little bit of a microcosm of this very great thing that happened whenever this whole thing was thought into being before.
Right.
You and I also think things into being. Every time we think, we are creating virtual state energy. So we have to be very careful about what we create.
Sure, it's the same with speech also.
Every word is...
Right.
Lives with you forever.
We create universes. You know, you're probably familiar, maybe both of you, with Oliver Reiser's work.
Mm-hmm.
And at one time, you know, he was emphasizing the cyclical creative cosmology, which agreed pretty much with what Dr. Boren said, but at the same time said that within this greater creation and dissolution of the greater universe, there would also be pockets, galaxies, sometimes stars, that have their own evolution within it. And even the universes we create in speech and thought that have their own relative timetable.
Yes.
So that all of these things are cyclical or cyclical. But one other thing I wanted to bring out that I think is very important, and I think there's a certain kind of a primitive arrogance that a lot of scientists, not so much scientists, but materialistic scientists are guilty of.
Yeah.
And it seems to be that they're almost blind in one eye, so they only see clearly what they hold in their hands.
That's because they're left-brain thinkers.
Exactly,
remember.
Exactly. But
that's
this is the point. The initiates have emphasized that consciousness and function always precede form.
Exactly.
And a lot of scientists and a lot of anthropologists have agreed that... If we have the need for a thumb, we develop a thumb.
Yeah.
But what they don't agree with is that we had a need for a brain and a body, and we develop the brain and body in the exact same way as the whole universe operates.
Yeah.
Or either someone developed it for us.
Right, right.
They haven't got to that point in their thinking yet.
Exactly. You know,
talking about thinking, we have to be very, very careful. There are some scientific experiments that I know about that are going on, which were involved in the scalar wave technology of Nikola Tesla.
Right.
That the scientists have such difficulty in working with this particular experiment because their thought forms are literally materialized.
Mm-hmm.
It's mind-blowing to think about that. But it happens to be that it is going on.
Right. You know, Bill, I think one of the problems, what your show really helps to bring out is some of the very, very badly needed information. I guess, in a sense, an awakening. You're providing a service, I think, an invaluable service, in that it's time to make more and more people aware that if a scientist who is dealing with this type of power doesn't have the conscience or the moral fabric or doesn't really have that aspect or element of the arts and philosophy and the spiritual aspects integrated,
right,
then we have some very dangerous people fooling around with those things.
Well, you know what I found out, Doug, and I appreciate your statements there very much, that the scientists that are getting into dealing with what we call, what I look upon as awesome energy.
Exactly.
Do it with fear and trepidation.
Fear and trepidation.
Simply because of what the mind is doing. Because so much of the time, this technology amplifies the mind. You're putting technology, you're amplifying mental energy or psychic energy with technology. And that can be enormously destructive unless your mind is in the right place.
That's right.
And the message that we have to get, and this is what something that Dr. Mitchell talks to us about, and I try to talk to you about it, is that we have to get our mind in the right place because as a race, we have moved our technology to the point now that we are what we think. And we are amplifying that with our technology, and we're also amplifying that with our own evolvement. And how we think can make or break us as a race and as a planet. And we are at that stage now.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I agree. It is a critical point, and that's one reason that...
Hopefully we'll make it.
Sure, really. I believe we will. I believe that's in our hands also.
We may have some catastrophes along the way, but I think we'll make it.
But one final point... Again, I think metaphysics and the ancient mysteries and even the current, esoteric systems and the merger between science and mysticism are so important because they're giving birth to a type of wisdom. And so many people confuse intellect, with wisdom, and they're different.
Right.
There's a saying that wisdom is the child or the offspring that is born of the marriage of the mind and the heart.
Well, there's two things happening.
Beautiful statement.
There are a lot of people that have been receiving over the ages what we would call insightful information.
Right.
And they literally were having a direct communication with forces greater than theirs. And we're laying that down as fact. Now, also, there was our pure, raw science, our from Missouri show me kind of thing.
Right.
And all at once, those two are coming together. And though they couldn't explain why the men of insight of hundreds and thousands of years ago could know these physical properties, scientifically, we're now be able to see that they are right. So you're seeing them coming together.
Right.
And it's kind of a very, very exciting time
it is.
To live.
It's a great time to be alive.
Great time.
Listen, a final question. Larry, what kind of material can we look forward to from you? What are you planning to do next, and how can we get some of your material?
Let me put it this way.
Oh, boy, are you in trouble, Doug.
You've asked the $64 question here. Here's my basic statement. I believe the best way to serve progress, which is what we're really talking about, is to be able to show with a sense of humor, of course, that our Western civilization, our entire Western civilization, though it does have some good points, granted, is much more off the beam than any of us ever dreamed possible. It's much more, if I dare to use this word, insane, I'm going to use it anyway.
Try snake pit.
Yeah, it's a snake pit full of insanity. And do you know what insanity really means? It means being wrong and really thinking you're right and not even being willing to look at the evidence that maybe you could be wrong.
Sure.
And that's what is insane about our society. I have 15 or 20 categories of insanity here, and you go to the experts in these fields, and they don't want to recognize that there's anything wrong.
We call it having an open mind, Doug.
Right.
And that's what this show is all about.
Well, are you publishing anything right now? Larry?
You know how difficult it is to get people to listen to Larry Boyd.
Yeah, I mean, if I could find my friend a publisher or even a co-writer who had influence with a publisher or with a magazine or with a newspaper, anything, or a movie studio, we would put out a tremendous amount of material. I have what I call amazing new scientific discoveries,
right.
And I would like to put it out in the format of either a movie, you know, a record, a book, a series
right.
of articles, but I've got to have some collaboration.
See, Larry doesn't have an open mind. He doesn't understand that being on this show has greater
right.
circulation than having an article in the Los Angeles Times
right.
or a Newsweek magazine.
Is there, any, is there any way that I can get in touch with you, Larry? Because that's the kind of thing. I'm a lecturer also on this subject matter,
nice.
And
sure.
I'm involved.
Do you have a number where they can reach you, Larry?
Yes, I'm going to be out of town for a week beginning Monday, but ordinarily you could reach me if you got really something vital to share. 483-7351.
Okay.
And the best time is mornings up till noon, or if it's really crucial and no other time is available, around midnight, but no later than, say, 12:30.
Right.
11:30 to 12:30 or something like that.
Because we are involved in the networking process of bringing people together to help make some of these things a reality.
That's the only way it works these days, Doug.
Yeah, what I believe is we've got to expose, my friend, this is the bottom line, we've got to expose how far upside down, backwards, and inside out our world really is before people will sit up and take notice and really say, my God, I didn't think things were that bad, because the newspapers aren't going to tell you it's that bad, or the television isn't, and the other experts and authorities of our...
The Open Mind Show is going to tell you.
Only the Open Mind Show is going to tell you.
About it.
And if you missed that number, we'll have it for you here at broadcast.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it very much. Good to have your support. I'm Bill Jenkins with Dr. Lawrence Boron on KABC in Los Angeles. We'll be back in just a moment.
We've been doing that,
trying to do that here for about 4 years.
Yeah, I think basically you really have.
Let's go to, I think Bud is on the line. He wants to talk to you a little bit about gravitation. Bud?
Yeah, I'd like to talk to you about contusio et complex.
About, pardon?
I was listening to a dissertation here some 4 or 5 months ago by a German. He described a machine which he said they were building in Japan and Germany.
You're talking about Dr. Hans Nieper.
I don't know what his name was.
Yes.
He spoke with a very clear English with a little accent.
Okay.
And you were listening to Michael Jackson's show, I think.
Maybe it was. I don't know.
Yes.
Go ahead.
I'd like to know what you know about that machine.
Gee, if you're asking me, I really have to confess ignorance on that one.
This is a tachyon field converter.
Tachyon field faster than the speed of light, right?
It pulls its energy out from a very broad thing known as the tachyon field.
Okay.
It's hard to really describe just what that really is. But nevertheless, it does work. And they put this converter onto an electric motorbike. The brand name of it is Solo, a solar motorbike. Now, you can get it with batteries in West Germany. Or you can get one with a tachyon field converter. And my understanding, Bud, is that it is on the market now in West Germany. The West German government does not exactly know how it operates. I have looked at the specs from the West German government where they tested it. And the fellow says, we don't know what makes it work, but it's working.
It's not now, based on magnetic energy, pretty sure.
Well, the way I understood it, he overcame gravitation. By utilizing the magnetism of the different solar bodies.
Magnetic repulsion energy?
There is a great relationship between celestial bodies. In the case of this particular device, we're in a prime position on planet Earth because we're near two celestial bodies, being the Moon and the Sun. The Sun, of course, being the most important one.
Yes.
They're also using this device to power heating elements in West Germany.
No kidding.
The device is also being developed here in the United States.
Well,
now, in Japan, they're using what is known as the Wankel magnetic engine, which is going to be produced in the Mazda automobile very shortly, if not already.
Is that magnetic repulsion type, too?
Well, it's not the same thing because the...
No fuel.
Of the magnetic Wankel magnetic engine, occasionally, maybe once every 2 or 3 weeks, depending on usage, you may have to plug it in a little bit. But other than that, its efficiency is extremely high. Develops about 45 horsepower.
Oh.
And for, you know, that's all you need over there.
Anything related to the guy out here in Van Nuys, Ed Gray, that had a...
The Gray motor? No, the Gray motor is quite a different thing from what I understand.
It has no moving parts, you know, it's not supposed to have...
I think it's a hydrogen-based motor.
But it's supposed to work on magnetic repulsion, I believe, too.
There were a number of those now coming out of the woodwork, and I've had a chance to look at some of them, and some of the prototypes are absolutely operational and working.
Really?
Some of them work on gyros. There is a motorbike that works on a gyro, uses no fuel, and you cannot push the motorbike over when the motor is running. You can't do it.
I'll be darned.
Well, of course, that happens on ships, too.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
But the solar motorbike is on the market in West Germany, and you don't use any fuel.
Well, let's get one over here so we can...
Government will let it out, I understand.
Let it into the state.
Let it all right, huh?
Yeah.
I understood that he could travel. He it was quite a learned dissertation. He spoke in German, but very clear English. I mean, the German accent.
Uh-huh.
But the way he described it, it's something you could travel in the universe.
Oh, really? Planet to planet, huh?
Planet to planet, utilizing the forces of the different heavenly bodies.
Well,
you have to be within proximity of celestial bodies. Now, it's very difficult for us to envision getting away from those, but you can for a while. There may be node spaces or node points out in space where you would be out of range, as it were, but I don't think that's something that, in our level of technology, we have to worry about in our lifetime.
Not quite yet.
Well, not before bedtime, anyway.
Yeah.
They did used to speak a lot in UFO stories of writing the magnetic currents or magnetic waves and magnetic field lines of force.
But if you want to know more about that, the gentleman's name was Dr. Hans Nieper, and he is an entrepreneur, and he is a dentist, I think, by trade. But he is very involved in this advanced science that's going on and has been helping in the funding of these particular enterprises that are going on in Europe. And you can reach Dr. Nieper very well if you would call broadcast information here Monday morning and talk to Lita. She will give you the address of him. This is Lita is her name at broadcast information here at KABC.
Right.
557-7365.
Right.
She will give you the address. And in fact, if you want to call him in Hanover, West Germany, I think she has a telephone number for him.
Oh.
Yeah.
But those people, you see, forgot to check with MIT to find out that they couldn't do this and went ahead and did it.
Yeah, that's the way a lot of things happen. Some people don't believe they're didn't realize they were impossible, so they happen to go ahead and try it.
No, you check with the scientific establishment in the United States, you find out you can't do anything.
You can't.
That's right.
Right.
So you don't check with them and go ahead and do it.
That's right. Don't check with them. Okay, the next...
Good deal.
Oh.
I'll be in touch with Dr. What's his name now?
Hans Nieper. N-I-E-P-P-E-R.
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 I may have one too many P's in here, but I don't think so.
That's close enough anyway. All right, Bill?
P-P-E-R. Okay.
Thank you very much. For calling in.
Let me backtrack a little bit. I was being caustic a little bit about the American scientific community. We have an excellent scientific community over here in many, many areas, and they have done some incredible things. I have had a chance to be privy to some of them.
I'll agree with that.
And I think that, on balance, they are second to no one on this planet. They have some areas where they can improve, but they, are very slow to take new ideas. But fortunately, in our defense establishment especially, they have taken on some new ideas, and we're in good shape. Actually.
Then they're going to make some incredible progress, probably.
Yeah, they are. Don't worry about it too much, although we like to put them down every now and then, because they are a little closed-minded about...
And a little bit arrogant.
Yeah, and arrogant, and we get a little, uptight with that.
Okay.
We're 13 minutes till midnight on a Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins. It's Open Mind. With me is Dr. Lawrence Moran, and we'll be right back in just a second. A foil for everything weird that's coming on, and I think that in proper payment... For all of this terrible abuse that I take from them, they could at least take me to the islands with them. Now, they say they're not going to do it. Now, I have already got it set up with Don the Beachcomber's wife to do an in-depth investigation of the kahunas when we go over there and all of that sort of thing.
Great.
There is only one problem, is that Ken and Bob are not going to take the star of their show. You know, they have the Ken and Bob company. They got everybody. They got Daryl Winrich. They got C.G. Ware. They got Elmer Dills. They've got Barker Man. They're not going to take Barker Man either. You know, my good friend Bob Barker. Now, we know that they're getting just bags of mail from the audience, to take Jenkins Man along. But they're hiding it out there someplace.
Oh, goodness sake.
Now, what I would really, really like to see...
Go ahead.
And it's simply as a matter of science and investigation, is a in-depth letter-writing, telephone, telegraph, picketing campaign.
A campaign. That's what I want
to
see, too.
To take Jenkins Man to Hawaii on when Ken and Bob go. And maybe we could even talk George Green into doing an open mind show from Hawaii with, the kahunas and all of those sort of things.
Yeah.
We might as well do something worthwhile, because, what Ken and Bob do is nonsense, and what we do is...
It
is very, very important in this world.
Extremely.
So I would really, really appreciate a heavy bunch of letters and to George Green, Wally Sherwin, Rune Aldridge. let's get, all the way down, get everybody involved, because we all know that the star of the Ken and Bob show is Jenkins Man, and so therefore, if Ken and Bob are going to Hawaii, particularly Hawaii, the Jenkins Man ought to go. And my personal engineer, Dick, has to go also. Dick Grinnett, he needs to go. And Barbara Essenson needs to go. And
I wouldn't mind going.
Larry Boren needs to go.
I wouldn't mind at all.
But if, and Rob wants to go over here, the my program coordinator.
Love it.
There's just no reason why Ken and Bob should go without Jenkins Man and his staff.
Right on.
So would you please send a letter to Ken and Bob and to George Green and to Wally Sherwin. You can even send it to New York. To Ben Hoberman. And tell Ben that they'll ought to go. Oh, Ben will love that, but
he'll
go ahead
that.
And just... Forget the letter to Ben Hoberman. Erase that.
Erase that one.
All right, that's the point. But I really would like some letters. I would like for them to know that you and I are together, and, of course, you would like to see me go to Hawaii, wouldn't you? Okay, Larry, let's go to another caller and see what is on their line. I believe we have Al on the line. Hello, Al.
Hi, Phil.
Are you going to send a letter to Ken and Bob? And
I would like to go. How about taking me along?
Let's don't confuse this.
Yeah, let's stick
all
with
right,
the
all right, all right,
Larry. Oh, send George a letter.
All right. And okay. Your question for this particular moment?
You'll pardon my ignorance, but you've discussed this. I'm a first-time caller, first-time listener. I didn't even know the program was on the air.
Where have you been? Been here almost 4 years. Shame on you, what you were doing on Saturday night.
Fox in my house, right? But anyway,
go ahead.
Emmanuel Velikovsky.
Yes.
I wondered when you were talking earlier about the axis shifting. Have you? I imagine you have discussed his works on your.
Yeah, we've done a number of shows of Velikovsky.
Well, there. Okay, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, there is an enormous amount of things to think about, and perhaps that have been proven that Velikovsky had to offer. Some of the things I think he stretched a little bit, like Van Doniken did.
Mm-hmm.
But nevertheless, anybody who was interested in what's going on in this universe should read Velikovsky. There's no doubt about it.
Well, at one time, though, he was considered... he was a psychiatrist, first off, right? Am I not correct?
Yeah, right.
So he was not trained in physics or...
That's why he could come up with an unorthodox view like that.
How unorthodox is it today? I mean, considering the evidence that's available.
A little problem with the comet. Other than that, he has a lot of interesting things to say.
Well, I'm wondering about the shifting of the poles.
That's an absolutely proven fact.
Well, such an event would be so cataclysmic. I mean, what I can't understand is if that happened. He's talking not about a gradual shift, as I recall.
Almost instantaneous.
Instantaneous. Okay, that explains the freezing of the water in Siberia and the fossils that were found there.
Or the mammoth with, tropical fruit still in his mouth.
Well, I have one question. If something like that happened, how could anything on the Earth survive?
Nothing did, really, at the time. Or at least it was what did survive was just the survival of the species. But you got to go, this was a long, long time ago. And as we were talking about earlier, it's almost like it was a cosmic design to get this planet lined up to the point that it could support life as we know it now. Otherwise, it couldn't have before.
All right, then life began from that point. That we have now on Earth.
Well, what are you calling life? Human life or
human
just life in general?
Whatever species, living species we have on the Earth.
Human
today.
Life is a rather new thing, and it just all at once appeared in twinkling geologically. It has no rhyme or reason for it, and the things about it that propel it have nothing to do with its survival.
Well, you stated earlier about 10,000 years ago.
Rather, 40,000 years ago for the human.
Yeah, but wait a minute. Let me throw the thought. The last flip-flop of the magnetic axis, I read somewhere in one of the textbooks, supposed to have occurred around 12,000 years ago. Now, that would put it right around the time of the fall of Atlantis, according to many authorities.
You're talking about a magnetic flip-flop, I think. I may be wrong, Al, but you were talking about a polar flip-flop, were you not?
Well, I'm talking...
I'm in an axis flip-flop.
I'm talking about a magnetic polar flip-flop. Now, what would you mean by an axis flip-flop?
Well, where we just... the actual axis changed of the Earth. This is what Velikovsky was talking about.
But you mean a 180-degree...
sometimes 90,
no.
Sometimes 180. We have about three or four different one of those that we can pretty well document.
Okay.
Where just the axis of the planet changed. Now, we know that the polar poles change, but that doesn't affect life near as severely as the axis of the planet changing.
Possibly not.
And that could happen again at any time.
There's no reason to believe that it couldn't.
Okay, well then maybe we should all go to Hawaii and live it up.
I really think that we ought to live it up every chance we get a chance.
Maybe
well,
so.
This is amazing. I didn't realize that Velikovsky, as far as I knew, of course it's been some years since I've been in college, was considered, to put it mildly, kind of like a nut.
He certainly was rejected during his day, but...
He's coming back, I guess, like Wilhelm Reich and a few others.
Right.
As Jesus said, a prophet is without honor in his own hometown.
In his own generation.
Okay, then Einstein was right when he said that Velikovsky would someday be recognized as probably one of the greatest scientists of the...
He did say that, and I think it's interesting and a lot of things about Einstein are now being disproven. Isn't that odd, you know, that it works backwards in that way?
Well, it was only towards the end of Einstein's life that he came into agreement with Velikovsky. As I understand, they knew each other. They had corresponded, I don't know how personal friends they were, but they knew each other. And it was only towards the latter stages of his life that he began to feel that Velikovsky was right, so he gave in.
No kidding.
Which is, if it's true, I don't know. See, that's why I'm asking. I don't know how much this is true. This I got out of a class in philosophy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we can only say that there's a lot of evidence that maybe supports Velikovsky if it's looked at with an open mind.
Well, see, there were some great minds back at that time. Einstein, of course, being one. Tesla being another.
Right.
Wilhelm Reich, another one. Velikovsky as another one, coming from another, you know, side of the fence.
I wonder if there any evidence that Tesla and Einstein ever talked to each other, conferred, or...
I think they did, but I'm not sure. I couldn't tell you for sure. They lived in two different worlds. You know, Tesla was embroiled with Edison so much. You know,
yeah,
they were...
industrial world.
They were at the opposite ends of the fence. They were caught up in Wall Street. Both of them were, and both of them were used in a way that way. Tesla more than the other.
Yes.
Tesla, I think, was probably the greatest genius of our time.
Well, regardless of their record of how outstanding their achievements were, if all of this is true, if what Velikovsky said, even if 50% of it is true, then we are just scratching the surface. We haven't even begun to look into the reality of the world we're living in.
Right, and that's why we have to examine all unorthodox views of any kind that have any merit whatsoever to back them. We have to expose our minds to them and look at them and not just reject them
out of hand.
Well, thank you very, very much.
Al, thank you for your question, and I wish we had time to talk to you about Velikovsky. I'll promise you I'll do another show on him. He is a fascinating character. I'll bring Marvin Luckenbacher in here, who knows about him so well. Larry, Dr. Lawrence Morin, thank you for joining us on this Saturday
night. It's already over, Bill.
It's already over. You're going to have to come back. Promise me you will, would you?
Certainly I will, because I just about didn't get halfway through my list.
No, you didn't. Stay tuned for Tom Hall. I'm Bill Dick.